Good evening, anglers. Welcome to Hooked on Fly Fishing. I'm Colin Shepherd, and it's Friday, the 11th of January. Hooked on Fly Fishing is proudly supported by Rod and Reel Tackle Newmarket. They have the biggest range of fly fishing and fly tying gear in New Zealand. Have a look at their website, rodandreel.co.nz. On tonight's show, we replay an interview with Doug Stevens of nzfishing.com. Now, nzfishing.com is New Zealand's premier fly fishing website. The couple responsible for the website are Doug and Bev Stevens. Bev is a website designer and editor, and she has award-winning skills in the areas of visual design and editing. Doug is the writer and researcher for nzfishing.com, and he's mad keen on all things freshwater. And with Hooked on Fly Fishing now is Doug Stevens. Good evening, Doug.
Good evening, Colin.
Are you well?
I am very well.
All right. Yep. Thanks for being available to talk fly fishing and nzfishing.com tonight. I appreciate that.
I appreciate being able to do so.
All right. Thank you. Now, who got you interested in fishing, Dave? How did that all start?
Well, my interest in fishing is quite a story because my grandmother used to live on Waiheke Island in the Hauraki Gulf.
Oh, so you're an Auckland boy?
No, I'm actually a King Country boy, but I used to have all of my holidays on the Hauraki Gulf, in the Hauraki Gulf. And being about 4 or 5 years old, she decided that to keep me entertained one day while we waited for the boat to come in, the old Baruna as it was known, she made up a homemade fishing rod from a curtain rail and a bent hook, bent nail for a hook and so on. We went down to the wharf to wait for the Baruna to arrive, and I put this out, and I didn't have any luck. And as people do as they come past, one person came past and said, how are you getting on? Have you caught anything yet? And I was standing intently at the rails and with a potato on the end of the line. And the person said, why is he using a potato for bait? And my grandmother gave the immortal words that have become remembered forever in our family. Doug is catching fish and chips. And from that small beginning, I became absolutely hooked on fishing, to use a wonderful phrase. And somebody at the end did take pity on me, and they did put a fish on my line. It was a very dead fish, and I hauled that up. But as far as I was concerned, as a 4-year-old, I was a fisherman. I'd caught my first fish, and from then on, I have never stopped having a passion for freshwater and saltwater fishing.
Excellent. That's a great start. Now, when did you start particularly fly fishing, freshwater fly fishing, Dave?
Yeah, well, it was about the age of 7, actually. I lived in the King Country in a fairly isolated part around the Pewpew district, and suddenly just one boy came to school one day and he said he had caught a trout in a river called the Mangataki, and this just blew me away. He was my local river and it had something called trout in it, and from that moment on I was up that river with my friend John Neal as often and as long as I could. We spent days during the summer where you would come back absolutely burnt to a crisp. Very seldom did we manage to catch any fish, but when we did, those were fish that we kept for the pot, and catch and release was not certainly anything on our itinerary.
Okay, do you remember your first trout?
I do indeed. I can remember. It's a spot, and every time I drive past this particular poplar tree that grows alongside the Mangataki, I know there's a rock down in the water there, and I can remember exactly that. The first fish I caught was below that rock, and I still go back to it, and believe it or not, there always seems to be a fish still behind that rock.
Just waiting for Doug Stevens.
Absolutely, and every fish since I think I've actually released, though.
Excellent. Well, what's the attraction for fly fishing for you, Doug? What do you think it is?
It's a really hard question. For me, it's so many things, but I think it's a deeply ingrained something so deep in my psyche that it's very hard to say what it is. I love the solitude. I love the meditative quality of fly fishing because it is very meditative, and I think it has a lot of the qualities that people who go out and spend time, truly meditating. Yes. That if you actually are with a fishing fly rod, you're undertaking many of those same skills. You're concentrating on something. But your mind is able to go free into other areas, and I find almost the zen of fishing is something that I need on a constant basis, and I find that those the cabin fever months of the winter are something that I find quite difficult. And so I'm really keen to get fishing. But, you know, there's lots of other things. So you can never have a day out fishing where something unusual or something different doesn't happen.
That's right. It's weather dependent and water clarity. There's a whole lot of variables in action.
And I don't know if others have actually experienced this too, but sometimes when you've been on a very isolated river and you get into rhythm and your fishing is going really well and you're just moving along very quietly, the wildlife around you seems to react. And I've actually been on rivers and I've seen deer in the distance, not too close, but seen deer come down and drink. They look at me, and I'm sure if I was just walking along the river, tramping along, they would have actually disappeared. But they look, they drink and disappear back into the bush. And there's something, I think, that people do come in tune with nature much more when they get into their, what I would call, the rhythm of fishing.
That's very well put, Don. Yes, and that story about the deer, because you're not making any noise.
Yes.
There's no noise associated with casting a fly line or anything, is there? So,
no.
Yeah, they're not frightened, maybe. Yeah, that's right.
And I think, actually, there's something about you, just the calmness of yourself, and
yes,
and that you've got yourself into a particular state, and wildlife seems to react to it.
Okay, then family and career came along for a while, and then you were going to go to Canada, and you thought, I'd better do some research on this Rocky Mountains area. Tell me what happened there.
Right. Yes, I worked as a dean or a head of department within the polytech and university sector for about nearly 25 years. And being sort of within that academic realm, you get the chance to go and on conferences and so on. And one of the conferences and one of the times I was able to go and visit, places I was able to go and visit, was in the Rocky Mountains. And I thought, well, you know, Rocky Mountains, it's got great rivers, great lakes. I'll go and research a bit about the fishing there. And I went onto the internet, as you do, and I found that all the information was there, but it was very, very hard to track down all of the bits and pieces that I wanted to find out about. You know, what license did I need, what the season was, where were the best places to fish, what sort of gear should I take when I'm going into a strange environment like that, what sort of fish could I expect, and where should, and all the questions that a person who's going to a new area would have to have answers for.
Yes.
And from that, the whole thing of, I realized that if I was having this difficulty, and I had huge difficulty, because when I got to the Rocky Mountains and got into the Rockies, I found that the season that actually was closing the week afterwards, so this is sort of like turning up at, you know, right at the very end of the season.
Okay.
It was almost snowing. In fact, snow came very quickly afterwards, and people said, no, the fishing's really finished for the year. So luckily I hadn't dragged a lot of gear across with me, and I ended up doing very limited amount of fishing in that area, and but came back with the idea that, well, maybe there's something, if people are coming to New Zealand or people are travelling around New Zealand, they're going to have the same questions. What do they need in that particular area? What is the fishing like, and so on?
And that's sort of put nzfishing.com into your head.
Absolutely. And I realised that the internet had this powerful, was a powerful resource, but if we could actually develop something that was the one-stop shop for the angler who could find out anything they needed about any part of New Zealand or any river or lake, and get onto those rivers and lakes so with the equipment that they needed and so on. So it's not just for overseas people, it's for New Zealanders as well.
I know. Your wife, Bev, she's an excellent website designer and won awards and stuff like that, so it really is a team effort. You do all the research and stuff, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Your research for me is actually getting out on the rivers. I think I've got the wonderful part of the job.
Is that a dream job?
I think it is the dream job. If I had to actually sit down and write a job description that was the dream job for any person who is passionate about angling, I think I've got it.
Yeah.
I can go fishing on my own. I can take people with me. The whole purpose of my fishing is to find out more about the different rivers and the different places, and I just have an opportunity continually to get onto places that, and into areas that maybe other people don't. But what I do want to be able to do once I have done that is to be able to write it up and share the experience with others, so other people can actually make the journey themselves and hopefully be able to experience great fishing.
Okay, now what year did you start nzfishing.com? Was it a while ago?
Yeah, 2002, I would say, but it hasn't been going. Mm-hmm. It hasn't become live for that long. It would be. It took us there's a huge amount of information on it, and it was a huge amount of writing. And we actually went through four iterations of putting the website together.
Yes.
We would start off on a particular way, and then I would sit down and say, well, I don't think we've got it right this time. And we went through four different times trying to get something that we were happy with. And I'll tell you what, Bev's a perfectionist when she comes to these sort of things. Yeah. And she wanted it exactly right, and before it went live, and we were very proud of what we actually put together, and it actually has won awards, and it's been very well commended. Yes. Throughout the world by people who use it.
I know. Well, I call it New Zealand's premier fly fishing site, and I've said that for a long time.
Well, thank you.
Okay. How big would it be if you tried to print it out? How big would the website be?
It's huge, yeah, absolutely. I often sort of, you know, that you're going to need many reams of paper. I sometimes say to people, you need 35,000 A4 sheets, you know, to actually print everything on it. It's thousands of pages in web terms, in the sense that a page may stretch for many, many pages. But if you tried to print it out with all the photographs and all of the information and the reports and everything that's there, you're into tens of thousands of pages of information. Yeah. And it's very deep, and you can go and research into all sorts of areas.
Yes, you can draw down. Okay, that's a good lead-in. Just tell us about what you've actually got on the website. Can you summarise that, Doug?
It's quite hard to summarise in the sense, because it is so yes. complete. Because what we try and do with the website is put into it everything that we think an angler would want to know about fishing a particular river. So there is descriptions of literally hundreds of rivers and lakes throughout New Zealand. Take the West Coast alone. I think we've got about 80 different rivers and lakes with full descriptions, and that describes how to get to them. They're all mapped, so he's got the access on how to access the different rivers. We've got what equipment to use, what flies work on, flies and lures that you would work well on that, and we take advice from various anglers in those areas. We talk about the nature of the river, what sort of river it is. Some rivers are particularly good for dry fly fishing. Others are actually much more nymph fishing or even lure fishing. Mm-hmm. And so we try and actually describe the experience and the attraction of each particular water, so that a person can go on to it, know what they're going to get to. And we put photographs up of most of the rivers that we can. We're running a big photo competition at the moment where we've got wonderful photographs which will be going up on the site in the next week or so. And so it tries to be that complete resource, but we also try to keep it very up to date at any particular time. So we have things like people send in reports, and we're really delighted by, you know, the reports that we get on a regular basis. And there are people like Gary Little from Hunting and Fishing in Taupo who sends in a report we get it every week quite religiously. Yes. And others from Fish and Game and so on. And these we put up as soon as we get them, so that other people can get in there and they know they can come to our site, they can click on those reports, and they'll have the most up-to-date information about where they're going.
It must be a full-time job, day and night, to maintain it all.
Yeah, but it's a wonderful job, isn't it? I'm reading about the fishing too, and I'm actually dealing with the things that I love doing. Mm-hmm. And although that, and the times that I am away fishing, which is reasonably frequent, Bev will pick up on those aspects of the work and put those reports up. We've got into quite a good pattern now where we can put them up reasonably quickly, and they're always there, and we do try and keep things very, very up to date, so that if anything new comes in, it's there as soon as we can get it.
It's got to be topical, doesn't it? Yes, exactly.
Yep.
Right.
Absolutely.
And you've got like maps on how to get there and accommodation and everything in
there. Yes, the maps are quite neat actually, because we've got the two levels of maps. The first one is actually how to get there, and it shows the roads and the river, and that's really all it shows. So you can see the points where you can make the access onto the river. You can push a button and you get the whole topography, so you can see if there's going to be a particular canyon or, you know, gorge or something that's going to stop you moving up a river at any place. And so you can get an idea if you're planning to go to a new area that you've never fished before. You can use this, and although it's, you know, you would still need topographical maps if you're going into very remote areas. I wouldn't advise using ours if you're going into the Uruweras or somewhere. But if you wanted to get an idea of the type of area that you want to get into, you could, these maps will give you all that information.
All right, yes, I know, I appreciate that. Now, do you still manage to get out about 100 days a year on the water?
I try.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
It's wonderful. Yeah, yep, absolutely. And there are big blocks. I come back from about 10 days fishing around the Central Plateau area and experienced some absolutely stunning fishing on waters that I've never fished before. I went around to some spring creeks around Reparoa and around Taupo, and I was staying at a place in National Park called Travellers Park Lodge, and that's stunning actually, because you get so many of the headwaters. Yes. It's sort of so high, and then all the headwaters seem to radiate out from it. And you've also got these the wonderful lakes, Rotowera and Otangamangakau, or however you pronounce it.
Yes.
And of course, you've got the headwaters of the Whanganui, and you've got the Whakapapa, and all and the Retiruki, and so many rivers in that area that I was able to go and spend time on. And I just think it's great.
You mentioned at the top of the show, Dad, you're from the Pew Pew area?
Yes, yeah.
You wouldn't know a chick called Peter Scott from Aria?
Ah, Peter Scott, yes.
Not unreal?
Absolutely, yeah, okay. No, Peter Scott very well, yeah.
Well, you stay well away from him, mate. You'll have a lot of trouble with
him. No, Peter's great. Yes. And Peter actually caught his first trout on the Mangateke as well, which I find, he caught it, I know exactly where Peter caught his first trout.
Okay.
And, yeah, and he and Yoshi, of course, run a wonderful shop up there in Newmarket.
That's right. Well, Peter helped me catch my first trout on Lake Kuratau.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
We're down there years ago. He said, follow me around here, and he helped me. Got a couple of nice trout. It was here.
Yeah, no, he's a great fisherman. Both of them are, actually, because, of course, Peter's in the National Fly Fishing Team, the Silver Flies. And in actual fact, we've got a book of his on. If I can just sort of say something at the moment on behalf of the Silver Flies, because okay. Silver Flies are a national team, and they go and represent New Zealand in different areas around the world, and next year they're going to Poland.
Yes.
Now, they have to pay all of these expenses themselves, and we're trying to help out, and Peter has very kindly put up a number of books, which is called Best New Zealand Trout Flies, I think.
Yes.
Not fan.
Yes.
It's the book that is there has been signed by all of the contributors to the particular things. So all 30 people who've written a section in this book have actually signed it, and apparently there was a hell of a job getting them to do it around the country. And that book is actually for sale if anyone's so it's a great present for anyone who wants to find something for the angler who has got everything but not this book, and they can access that through our website on nzfishing.com, or go directly to Peter and at Rod and Reel, and all of the money that goes from that goes towards the taking the team across. Yeah. To the championships.
Yeah, Peter's, as you say, very good fly fisherman. He's represented New Zealand for over 10 years now.
Yep.
Various world champions. And Yoshi, of course, been
for
world champion.
Japan.
Oh,
yes. Yes, there's photos of both Peter and Yoshi on our website. So,
yes.
Yeah.
What are the major issues facing the freshwater angler at the moment, Doug? What do you think?
Well, I think there are several issues that are going through. I mean, the big one, I mean, people will have seen in the paper and on the news about the state of rivers like the Manawatu.
Yes.
We can also look at other states of rivers like the Mohaka and rivers around the country where we have treated as a country our rivers as drains for waste disposal. I think Tom Scott's cartoon in the Dominion Post today, which was, you know, a picture of a pristine and clean green year right sort of thing, is very true. And that's one that I hope that politicians are going to really work and local councils are going to really work to do something about. That's certainly one issue. There's another issue too, which is, I think, is to do with the stealing of rivers. People who are stealing rivers for hydroelectric power production, take a river like the Matakitaki and the Materi, which flow into the Buller region at Murchison. These rivers should never be dammed. These are just phenomenal backcountry wilderness rivers of the highest value to so many people, and to see them being dammed is I know generations later are going to look at us and say, if we allow that to happen, they're going to say to us, how could you have done that?
You can't get them back, can you?
You cannot get them back. That's once they've gone and things. And take the Hurunui. The Hurunui, which they're stealing for irrigation, not even for hydroelectric power. They're taking the Hurunui River. They're going to put a 73-metre dam on it. Water's going to be raised and lowered 60 metres for irrigation purposes every year. That will destroy any waterway. You cannot do that. And I would say that the other issue, I think there are two other issues, but one of the issues that really concerns me at the moment is the access issue.
Walking access.
Now, I went to meet with the Walking Access Commission earlier this week, and I was quite alarmed to hear them say that, in a sense, we're 2 years too late. And I think a lot of anglers are going to be very, very concerned when they hear that we are 2 years too late to try and wrench back from the mercenary types who are actually taking over the access to our rivers for commercial gain. And I'm putting it into fairly blunt terms there, because I feel very strongly that New Zealand, our forefathers, the people who came out from Europe in the early days, when made sure that all of the rivers and all of the hunting around the country was for everyone. It was never to be bought or sold. There's even an act that says you cannot buy or sell the water or the hunting. And I find it very alarming now to see that in so many areas around the country, people are actually now selling the access to the fishing. Not actually selling the fishing, but they're selling the access to it, to guides, to helicopters, and so on. The Rangitiki is a case in point, and where it's very difficult now to get into the upper reaches unless you actually go with a guide or with a helicopter. I was on a river in the central North Island, and the farmer booted me off. I was with an old friend of mine, and we had asked for permission further down, one of the other farmers, but we were spending the day and we were walking quite a distance. And so the original farmer had said, no, just carry on up the river, you'll be fine. We walked up, and halfway up we were stopped by another farmer who had moved onto his property, and he told us we weren't welcome there and we were to get off. And we later found that this particular farmer had sold the access rights to the stretch of the water to a local guide. Now, I feel extremely strongly about this, because if we don't do something, we are going to see that our fishing and there are rivers in so many places are going to become saleable assets. If you have a farm which has got a great river that's flowing over it, and let's, to practice our sport, most of us rely on the goodwill of farmers to get onto it. And if we have if we find that we allow this to happen, where guides can go in and say, I'll pay so many $1,000 to have exclusive access to that stretch of the river, we are putting into our rivers and our fishing and our heritage up for us as a saleable asset.
And so would you end up looking being the same situation as in parts of England?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I sometimes tell a little story that happened to me when I arrived. I spent 8 years in England, and my wife and I not long after we were married, we travelled through Asia for a couple of years, and we got to England. And those 2 years that I'd spent in Asia, 18 months or however long, were the longest I've ever spent without fishing. That's what marriage does for you. Okay. Or new marriage, anyway. And so when I got there, we bought a car and we went for a drive out in the country, and I came across a stretch of river which had an angler on it, and it was just beautiful. But one of those, England countryside is stunning, and here was an angler on this beautiful small stream fishing. And I did what every Kiwi bloke does. He jumps over the fence and rushes down to the guy and says, excuse me, do you mind if I fish with you? And now, if he'd said yes, I would have rushed into the next town, bought a license, bought a rod, bought all the things. I had to go fishing. But I'll never forget this guy's answer. He was crouching, fishing to a rising fish, and he stood up and he just looked at me and he said, no, I don't mind you fishing here if you don't mind being shot. And at that point, I realised that I'd actually, you know, the customs in England were very different. And what was actually quite interesting about that whole thing also was that the river happened to be the River Test, which is probably the most famous river in the world for fishing, and where Sir Isaac Bolton wrote about and so on. But I actually spoke to a person just the other day who had come back from England, and he had spent, he'd fished for 3 days on the Test, and he had spent $1,600 for the rights to do so, 1,600 New Zealand dollars for the rights to fish for 3 days on the Test. Now, we just do not want that. We cannot, we must do something to ensure that access to our fishing is maintained for us and our future generations. We will, it would be a tragedy if we allowed what's starting to happen continue. And I would, if I can use this opportunity to say to people, go to our website, have a look at the issues. We've put a submission together to the Walking Access Commission, which is going to go in on the 15th. We're submitting it on the 15th of December. And we want as many people as we can get to stand up and say, what is happening at the moment is wrong. We must maintain that free access to our resources, and not only to fishing but to our hunting as well, and for kayakers and for trampers and for bird watchers and shy nudists or whoever actually wants to get into that into the backcountry. They are we've got to be able to actually have that as our heritage that we pass on to future generations.
Exactly right. You've got a lovely quote. We must not allow our fishing to become the domain of the rich and the tourists.
That's right.
And we must not allow the privatisation of our waters by stealth.
And it's up to us. Only we can stop it now. If we sit back, I also actually believe that, you know, fishermen must, we as fishermen, we're involved in an individual pursuit, and so when we come across somebody who says, no, you can't fish on this particular stretch of the river, we mutter about it, talk to our mates, and we slope off. I think we've got to, as fishermen and anglers, we've now got to start hunting as a pack. We've got to get our act together and say, we as a group have got rights. Let's say 100,000 people buy licenses in New Zealand, so there's a lot of people out there. They're just for fishing. Then there's the hunters, then there's the kayakers and the trampers. We've got to let people onto these waters, otherwise the cost and the cost to us and is huge, and to our children is immense.
That's right. You've got support, I know, from people like Ian Roger, Federation of Freshwater Anglers, who've been on this show. And there's Corans. There's lots of, but we've got to join together. And we urge people at the top of the show, Doug, to log on to nzfishing.com, have a look at your submission, email your support, and you'll add their name to it.
Absolutely. We've got several hundred already, but we would like to make this a huge... I'd love to have thousands go in with us, because if we could do that, we believe that we're doing something that people in the future will thank us for. If we don't do it, we've lost it.
That's right. Now, you mentioned before, Doug, approximately 100,000 people buy fishing licenses.
That's in the fishing game,
Fishing game, Do you think the numbers are rising or falling? Have you got any info on that?
The numbers are staying incredibly static, but part of the reason they're staying static is we're getting more overseas tourists coming in to go fishing, and we're getting less kids picking the sport up. And I talked about four issues, and that's a fourth issue that I actually believe that is really important to us. We've got to get young people back into the sport, and we've got to...
How do we get the young ones involved?
All around the country we've got people that take a kid fishing, but I just think one of the things to do is that if there's a young person in your life, take them out sometimes, show them. Not everyone's going to be grabbed with it, but like my grandmother who put me on a wharf with a cooter rod... You never know who's going to be grabbed. I was on the Waimakariri River, which is in just out of Pitararu. And we'd gone across the farm there, that's the A1 farm stay place, and we were fishing on the back of that. And the a family turned up, a young family from, strange enough, from Reparoa, where we'd just come from, and they we put these two boys, and we was two anglers, and we took these two boys out fishing for the day alongside us, and they couldn't cast with the fly, but we showed them how we would cast often for them and let them bring the fish in. Now those kids went away absolutely blown away by the fact that they had got caught fish that hook to fish and so on. And hopefully that they take it up as a sport and they will now like to actually get out on the river.
They're the future of the sport, aren't they?
They are, yeah. And it, I think there's so much that fishing and outdoor pursuits offers young people, and having them being able to go and spend some time in the outdoors must be good for them.
Well, I agree totally, and there's some good people doing a lot of work. Strato Kotsalinis in Wellington,
yes,
you know, of course.
Yes, I know Strato.
Nongatai Hatchery, various fishing clubs around the country have kids' days, and yeah, it's absolutely vital, not only for the health of the population, but these people buying rods, and, you know, it's good for the industry.
Yep.
It's everything. You just got to get out there and get amongst them.
Absolutely. And you know, there are some great sort of things happening. I mean, I went out with Stratos with some young kids just a couple of weeks ago or a few weeks ago, and it was great to see these kids who had never fished before, who didn't know what they're doing. If you get out with Stratos, it's quite funny because, you know, he have all of these kids bellowing, strike, strike, strike. As the little indicator goes down and I'm used to fishing being quite a quiet sport, but yes. It wasn't quiet for these kids, but they went away and they were just so chuffed that they had a couple of fish each, that had a great day out, that learned something, you can tell some of them will take it up, and it's great to see.
Exactly, and Strato's done a hell of a lot of work for fly fishing at sport fly fishing level.
Yep.
Federation of Freshwater Anglers, and with his casting kids days and stuff like that. He's a hell of a nice guy to be.
Absolutely.
All right, Doug, we've got to wrap it up there. Thank you very much for that.
Right, we
appreciate that. Now, there's a hell of a lot of topics. What I'd like to do in the new year is get you back and we'll talk about water extraction and hydro and stuff like that if we can.
Yes, I like that. And if people have got any information that they want to send to us, or have got anything they want to actually talk or to raise concerns about, please do it through our website, because we do raise issues, and we see ourselves as not just an information giving about how to go fishing, but also how to protect our fishery.
Exactly right. nzfishing.com.
That's it.
Thank you very much, Doug Stevens.
Thank you very much, Colin.
Thank you. See you later.
Bye.
Cheers. Okay, that was great. Thanks for that, Doug. Now, we're just coming up towards the end. We'll see if we can fit in the fly fishing tip of the week. Easy on the back cast. One of the most common mistakes in fly fishing is overdoing the back cast. If you pull the rod too far back on the back cast, it can cause the line to hit the water behind you and it will spook the fish. It's best to stop the rod by the 1 o'clock position so that you may straighten the line behind it and then make a precise fall cast. Now, with Hooked on Fly Fishing and Composite Developments, you can stay up to date with all the latest in fly fishing information. Hooked on Fly Fishing will return next Friday evening at 6 p.m. here on Planet FM 104.6. Until then, good fishing and tight lines.
Yeah. see the lights of her hometown. It's a long shot, but I'm gonna drive by her old house. Will she be there? Has she found someone to treat her right? Well, I wonder what she's doing tonight. Yes, I wonder what she's doing tonight.
Has she found somebody that will come on?
Well, I wonder what she's doing tonight.
Is there a chance she can still be around the world?
Oh, I wonder what she's doing tonight.
I wonder if she ever thinks about me.
I wonder what she's doing tonight.
Can it ever be the way it used to be?
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, hey, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire. The time for hesitation's through. There's no time to wallow in the mire. Darling, we could only lose, and our love become a funeral pyre. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire.
Conceal. Oh, yes, I'm the great.